Destination Freedom. Listen, it's the Freedom Bell.
Aye, the Freedom Bell, my friends. And this is Paul Revere, called back from the shadows by the sound of the Freedom Bell to cry again a warning that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Destination Freedom is presented by station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Paul Revere is the symbol of warning, ready to ride down the skies to shout an alarm. His destination, now and forever, freedom.
Today is Christmas Eve. Tomorrow, most of the civilized world will pause to celebrate the birthday of Jesus, the Son of God, sent by him to save the world. But then, as now, the world seemed bent on its own destruction, and Jesus was destroyed by it. So most men, even yet, sacrifice good and perpetuate evil. From the littlest act to the biggest deed, the world is permeated with evil. It is small wonder that peace on earth and goodwill toward men remain elusive goals. It is of greater wonder that man has not despaired, that he is willing to continue the search for peace, that he is ready to do battle to help himself and others to find it, in spite of himself. Man's heart must harbor the desire, the need for peace. There's Frank Johnson at his newsstand, busy selling newspapers and magazines on this Christmas Eve. You pass such a man on the street, you look at him and make certain observations based on what you see. Sometimes you're right, most times you're wrong. For no man can thoroughly describe another man from his outward characteristics. To know the complete man, you must know his thoughts. Frank Johnson has been blind for over 30 years. But day after day, there he stands. What are his thoughts on this Christmas Eve?
Paper, mister?
No thanks. Just glancing at the headlines.
I guess Christmas pushed the war into second place.
Well, I suppose one day a year we can afford to forget about our troubles and be glad we Americans still have Christmas over here.
Yeah, we're lucky. Our boys in Korea can't be having much peace on earth.
I guess you're right. Wonder what next Christmas will be like.
I remember one Christmas after the armistice, though I never saw the headlines of it.
You fought in the First World War?
Oh, yes. Yes, you might say I lived headlines in those days. Yes, sir. I spent Christmas in France in 1918. And I spent the morning of November 11th, 1918, in France, too. Though in a less comfortable place. It was a gray, foggy morning, about a quarter to 11. A light rain was falling, had a wind-up of a thunderstorm, but you couldn't hear thunder in the Argonne Forest. All you could hear was the sound of the guns. We had been fighting all night, and the men were pretty tired, laying there in the mud. And there was a machine gun nest just over a little hill, and it made sharp, funny little sounds. Someone had to quiet that machine gun. I knew I had only one chance in a million, but somehow I knew I was elected. So I began to crawl through the wet leaves, straight for the enemy's barbed wire. And suddenly, there was no sound at all. Just the rain pattering down. I had some sort of a crazy notion that it'd be safe to lift myself up a little to cut the wire so that I could get through. And I happened to glance at my watch. It was 11 o'clock. Oh, I'll never forget how still it was. It was as if the war had come to an end. Funny my thinking that even then. And then as I started forward, I felt the sting of lead. And just for a second, and I fell backward over the wire where they found me. I'd been shot just a couple of minutes after the armistice was declared. And later, in a hospital just outside Paris, where I spent that Christmas, I was to hear another headline.
Le président américain est arrivé en France. Le président américain est arrivé en
And the nurse, bending over my bed, translated it for me.
It seems that your president is to pay France a visit, monsieur.
Oh, why?
He has come to sign the treaty, monsieur. There's to be a meeting at Versailles.
Then it's really the end of the war, Ennis?
I hope so, monsieur.
The end of the war to end all wars. And so to the country which had given us the idea of liberty, equality, and brotherhood, he'd come our president with a dream of lasting peace. But the war was not so quickly over. Around the long, glistening table in the Hall of Mirrors at the old Chateau of Versailles, man again fought with man. Greed and revenge presided over the conference. And Wilson was sad and disillusioned. He returned to America to find the country gone wild with victory.
Happy New Year, Frank!
What? Huh? Oh, yes. Happy New Year.
See the papers? Biggest New Year's this country's ever seen.
Oh, it's sure fine to be back in the good old USA.
What are you going to do now?
Find a job, if I can.
Well, you know, Frank, it's not like it was when you went across.
I'm not expecting much. Just a chance to make my way.
So what are you staring at?
Nothing.
Well, what's the matter with you? Why don't you look at me? You act as if you didn't know me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do know your voice, but... Well, the fact is, I can't see you.
Frank, you mean you're...
It's all right. I'm sure even a blind man can find something to do. And I did find something to do. I found a newsstand. This newsstand, where I've been selling papers ever since. And I found out something interesting about selling newspapers. You can sell them by selling headlines, you know. I'd have the boy who brought me the papers read me the headlines every morning. In that way, I'd get to know what was happening day by day. And I got to see a lot of things behind the headlines. By the things people would say when they read them. Sometimes they'd stop and talk, like you've stopped and talked, and I found out there were a lot of things you could see inside of you. I began to see things that I'd never understood before. You know, what we'd been fighting for in France. You know, when you're in a war, you don't have much time to think about it. I felt proud that I'd been a part of it. But then, one day, I began to get a little worried. Well, son, what's in the headline today?
I think Wilson's going to die, and there's a lot of trouble about the League of Nations. I don't think America's going in.
Well, then what's going to happen to Europe?
Well, I guess we got enough to worry about in this country without sticking our noses into other people's business.
And I guess we did have enough to worry about. But I kept thinking something had gone wrong somewhere. And I didn't feel somehow that even with the end of the war, that the trouble was all over. Yeah, but there were other things to think about in those days. We had a new president, and the country was trying to get back to normalcy, they called it. But it looked to me like instead of getting back to normal, people were getting a little more crazy. I remember a fella came by one day singing,
"Yes, we have no bananas."
People were singing songs like that that didn't make any sense to me. Maybe they didn't have to. And they sounded sort of gay and carefree and kind of pleasant. And then I'd hear about people playing some sort of a Chinese game. Mahjong, I think they called it. And a fella came over from France saying,
"Day by day, in every way, I am getting better and better. Day by day, in every way, I am getting better and better."
And that sounded sort of cheerful, too. Anyway, people were happy. Or seemed to be. Yeah, they were making money. Even I was kind of prosperous. You remember when Coolidge came in and the way it seemed that he brought prosperity in with him. But every now and then, I'd get a feeling something still wasn't quite right, even then. I'd hear high-powered cars going by,
and I'd hear youngsters, practically kids, laughing. Laughing in a way that wasn't really laughing. Laughing the way people laugh when something hurts them way down deep inside and they want to forget about it. And I remember one day a girl stopped by the stand. I thought I smelled liquor on her breath. And by her voice, I knew she couldn't have been more than 18 or 20.
Hiya, Pop. Ooh, you don't mind if I lean on you for just a second, do you?
No. Hey, what's the matter? You dizzy?
Oh, that's good. Dizzy. That's just what I am. So is your old man. So is the whole cockeyed world.
Now, you wouldn't be a little under the influence?
Oh, you're just jealous. You want the telephone number of my bootlegger?
No, thanks.
You're a smarter man than I am, Gunga Din. You'll go blind drinking this hooch.
You're young. You don't need this stuff.
Horse feathers. People drink to forget, don't they?
What are you trying to forget at 20?
Everybody's going to pot, aren't they? Why shouldn't I? Why don't you get wise, Pop? Hooray! Merrily we go to pot.
Yes, in spite of booms in Florida, stocks soaring on Wall Street, you got the feeling that it all wasn't going to last. I remember a popular song that came out about then. A man with a monkey came by one day playing it on his hand organ. I'm forever blowing bubbles. All that prosperity was just like a bubble. And one day, it was in October, a man jumped out of a window just down the block. And that was a headline, too. Stocks falling, money melting away, prosperity melting away. Everyone was paying the piper. The news was bad then. But people still bought newspapers. They were still waiting for headlines that would tell them the Depression was over, that somehow life had started again for all of them. And then there was a lot of whistling in the dark. And somebody said prosperity was just around the corner, and somebody tried to revive that Frenchman's motto.
Every day, in every way, I am getting better and better. Every day, in every way, I am getting better and better.
The formula didn't work this time. The kind of prosperity men knew in the 20s was never to come again. And just as well, I thought. You began to see people who never talked to each other walking down the street together, being friends. You began to see democracy working again, you might say. Everybody was in the same boat, and everybody was helping each other to get out of it. We got started on a new basis. And sometimes you get a headline like some professor saying we were in an economic dilemma. Yeah, but at least we weren't living in a dream anymore. We were trying to solve things. And then, one day, like the echo of that thunderstorm in the Argonne, we found out that the world had gotten smaller. We could hear guns even over 3,000 miles of water. There was trouble starting all over again. Other people were trying to solve their problems, but not helping each other, fighting it out. Death was falling out of the sky. And out of this new thunderstorm came lightning that struck down country after country, almost faster than the presses could turn out the newspapers to tell about it. And then I got the idea that every day, instead of selling a newspaper, well, you might say I was selling a page out of a history book. And I was selling a kind of a freedom, too, for a couple of pennies. The freedom for men to have opinions and tell other men about them. Freedom that any man could buy, no matter how much or how little money he had. Real freedom. The freedom of the press. but the free presses were stopping in other parts of the world. And headlines were being perverted in Germany, in Italy, in Russia. And when on December 7th, 1941, there was another war headline.
Pearl Harbor bomb.
A man who was to make many great headlines for freedom said,
"Our course is clear. Our decision is made. When you see a rattlesnake poised to strike, you do not wait until he is struck before you crush him. In future days, we look forward to a world founded on the four essential freedoms. Freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. But as for now, with confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God."
The headlines in World War II meant something personal to me, too. In an air raid over Plesty, I lost my son. His birth 22 years before had cost his mother's life, so now I was all alone. And in Washington, another president, a great worker for freedom, gave his life to the cause of peace on Earth.
Nation mourns, FDR.
But when, after all, the awful news began to get better, there came another kind of an armistice day. This one they called VE Day. And President Truman said,
"I know that tonight the nation celebrates the victory over Germany. But here in Washington, we realize more than anywhere else in the United States that only half the war is over. This is no time for relaxing. The work must go on. Our men in the Pacific must be supplied. Every minute we stay away from our jobs may cost the life of an American soldier. We still have a war to win. Let us get on with it."
And toward the end of the war, there was good news from the Elbe River near the town of Torgau, Germany. Or so we thought at the time.
Come on, man. There they are.
Hey, are those Russians, Lieutenant?
Who else? All over the mud on both of us. You can't tell us apart.
Hey, Tavarez, Tavarez.
Hey, what does that mean? It
means comrades, you dope. Come
on. Oh, Amerikansky. You are a lieutenant?
Yeah, that's right. My name is Second Lieutenant William D. Robertson, U.S. First Army. These are my men.
I am Lieutenant Alexander Silvanchko, First Ukrainian Army.
We must be the first Americans and Russians to get together. This calls for a celebration.
First we embrace, yes?
Well, I guess so. Okay.
Amerikansky's friends of Russia.
That's right. Friends, comrades, whatever you like. We must make this a moment to remember.
Yes, we should have vodka. Instead, German champagne. But it is appropriate to use it on this occasion. Shall we drink from the bottle?
No, wait a minute. These 10 cups aren't exactly wine glasses, but they'll do. Is there enough for our men as well?
Champagne for everybody!
Well, here's to your health, Lieutenant. To Russia.
To America, my friend. No more war, only peace. America and Russia, friends forever!
That's right!
Only a handful of years ago, the world looked rosy. An organization of men met at San Francisco and made a United Nations a reality. Oh, it really looked as if the world wanted peace on Earth at last. Peace, harmony, cooperation, these were the keynotes struck at the beginning of the San Francisco conference. And somebody optimistically coined the phrase, "last chance for civilization," to describe the United Nations organization. Nobody doubted in those days that everybody would get together because everybody wanted the same thing, peace. And then, on one hot, sultry afternoon in midsummer, something happened to make that phrase, "last chance for civilization," really take on meaning. A single dynamic paragraph prepared by the War Department on an ordinary piece of mimeograph paper was released routinely to an unsuspecting group of Pentagon pressmen. And what a headline that made.
One atom bomb was dropped on the industrial city of Hiroshima at 15 minutes past 8 a.m., August 6th, 1945.
And on August 14th, just 5 days after the second atomic bomb had been dropped on Nagasaki, President Truman released the news that the world had expected for so many anxious weeks.
This afternoon, the Japanese government has unconditionally surrendered. General Douglas MacArthur has been appointed Supreme Allied Commander to represent the Allies at the formal signing of the surrender terms by Japan.
At long last, it was all over. The nation went wild with delirium. The nation took off on a 2-day holiday and began immediately to ask for that post-war world they'd so long been promised. Automobiles that had been put up for the war for lack of gas suddenly came out of a 4-year hibernation.
I want some gasoline.
How many, sir?
Fill her up. Hey, that sounds like old times, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. You don't know what a relief it is to get rid of those coupon books. Hey, would you like a wash, sir?
Not worth the trouble. I'm trading in this old tub any day now. As soon as the new cars roll off the assembly lines.
And in the butcher shop across the street there.
I'd like a nice, juicy T-bone steak about an inch thick.
I'm sorry, madam. There's a meat shortage, you know.
Oh, don't you know there's a war going off? Where's all the meat? If you haven't got a steak, how about one of those pre-war roasts I used to buy from you?
We aren't getting in any meat, lady. We've got some weenies, if you care for those, and a couple of chickens left.
Not getting in any meat, eh? Same old story. I suppose you expect me to get down on my knees and beg, as I've been doing all through the war. Well, the war's over now, and it's you who'll be begging for customers. I'm taking my business somewhere else.
And all up and down this street, inquiring reporters made the rounds of average citizens, asking what they wanted most now that the war was over. And they got the universal answers.
I'm going to buy a new home, one of those super-duper jobs where breakfast is automatically brought to you and where my wife has only to remember that it's Monday and all the contraptions do her laundry for her.
I want some nylons. Aren't these the sight? I've been wearing them for 4 years.
It'll be nice to have sugar back on the table for a change. I'm getting a little tired of using saccharin.
Maybe I can get a new pair of shoes, too, without bothering with these ration books.
Guess I can get a seat on an airliner again, too, without all that double talk on priority.
But I really want only one thing. I want my husband back from the South Pacific.
Yes. New homes, nylons, sugar, shoes, automobiles. They're getting the boys home from the Pacific and from Europe. These were the first headlines in people's hearts after World War II. But there were disappointments.
No, my husband isn't coming home for another year. He hasn't enough points.
I don't see why my boy has to be part of the occupation army.
Yes, my boy's out of the army, all right, but he can't get a job. He can't seem to get adjusted.
And those who stayed at home were not finding it easy to get adjusted either.
Building materials are scarce. No new homes for months.
Rationing will continue on important items such as sugar.
Emergency declared not over yet.
Strike in transportation.
Reconversion may be set back 2 years by shortages.
Coal miners strike. General auto strike. Strike! Strike!
Labor was throwing off wartime restrictions and engaged in protecting the rights of workers. They wanted more wages because of rising prices. Peace wasn't so wonderful. Well, not the kind of peace we had in 46 and 47. And on the world front, there was a new word creeping into the headlines coined by the United Nations. Remember?
Gentlemen of the United Nations Assembly, please come to order. Before we prepare the United Nations Charter for the ratification of the countries here represented, there is still a vote to be taken on Article 27 pertaining to the voting procedure. Any discussion from the floor?
Well, I don't suppose they care what a reporter thinks, but I'm against it. That kind of veto can make plenty of trouble.
What difference could it make?
All the difference in the world. Could gum up the entire works.
You're crazy. The Big Five are boss, and they're one big happy family.
Sure, but they haven't tangled yet. When will they begin to settle Trias, Franco, Spain, and the Orient?
What's the veto got to do with them?
Everything. One veto can rule out the settlement of any given dispute.
But it won't be used except as a last resort in a really big emergency.
Yeah? We'll wait and see.
Look, everybody's sick of war. Everybody wants peace. Nobody's going to veto that.
Meanwhile, Nobody was going to veto peace, eh? And the people in Europe, peace was just a new kind of nightmare, especially with red tape beginning to pile up again. People can't wait on theoretical decisions to be fed, to be given hospital care and shelter and clothes. People can't wait in the process of living and dying. One woman reporter wrote a headline for the last 1940s.
The Four Horsemen Outride the Four Freedoms.
In Paris, a Frenchman returning from the Buchenwald concentration camp dropped dead from malnutrition at the door of his home.
In Italy, thousands were too weak from tuberculosis to even read the glad tidings of peace.
Across the Balkans, displaced personnel, dazed and homeless, were looting and ravaging a countryside which no longer cared what happened to it.
Yes, the 1940s had the most terrible headlines of all times. And now, in 1950, at this Christmas time, we have more headlines about war and killing. Oh, but here I am rattling on like this, wearing you out. I guess you'd like to get home to your family on Christmas Eve. Excuse me.
Not at all, not at all. You're blind, and yet you see all this.
Sure, like I told you. When you're blind, you see a lot of things. You see the past, you see the present, and you get to thinking of the bad news every day is getting better someday. You keep dreaming of the greatest headline of all, peace on earth, goodwill toward men.
Think that day will ever come?
I don't know. But there's one day I hope will never come. That's when men stop fighting for the things that are really worthwhile. When men are willing to give up their freedoms and to be bonded into slavery. The day when men, whoever and whatever they are, stop fighting to defend their rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the kind of a Christmas I hope we'll never see. God bless us all, sir. Because we can still say Merry Christmas and mean it.
To know the complete man, you must know his thoughts. So you've come to know Frank Johnson and his dream of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Aye, that's the dream. The dream of a world of men. And down through the ages, I've seen that dream coming closer and closer to full and complete realization. Wars have been fought, aye, that's true. And men have died for the freedom we seek, and they're still dying. On this Christmas Eve, the battle for freedom has reached a major crisis. And on the solution of this crisis hangs the future of freedom. And our progress toward the full realization of the dream. You can bring joy to the world if you bring freedom to the world. So on this Christmas Eve, dedicate yourself to freedom for all men. Dedicate yourself to live, fight, and even die for freedom.
Portrayed by Maurice Copeland, will return next Sunday to narrate another chapter in the story we call Destination Freedom. Presented by Station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Today's script was written by Bill Hodapp and produced under the direction of John Cowan. Donald Gallagher played Frank Johnson. Other members of the cast were Paul Barnes, Geraldine Kay, Jack Lester, and Russ Reed. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Helen Morton and Jose Bethencourt. Our engineer was George Wilson. Sound effects by Cliff Mueller. This is Charles Chan reminding you that the sound of the Freedom Bell is your invitation to follow Paul Revere along the road to Destination Freedom. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.